Hey, you're currently listening to season 3 of the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford, and this season I chat with a range of individuals who work in tech. Looking for a coding bootcamp? Boston and Philadelphia-based Launch Academy has helped over 500 students launch coding careers since 2013 with curriculum that's updated every quarter based on hiring managers' feedback and lifetime postgrad support. Find out more at launchacademy.com. Flatiron School's online web developer program focuses on community, actual development tools, and features a curriculum that will teach you the skills you need to land a career as a software engineer. Get $500 off your first month by visiting flatironbootcampprep.com. Hey, listeners, welcome to the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford. In today's final episode in season 3, I talk with Chris Weisopol. Chris is the co-founder and chief technology officer at Veracode, where he oversees technology strategy and information security. In our conversation, we talk about the challenges tech trends create in terms of security, security issues to be aware of while you're building software applications, and the kinds of careers you can land if you're interested in pursuing paths like DevOps or site reliability engineering. If you're interested in cybersecurity and related fields, this conversation is for you. Remember, you can get show notes for this episode plus more information about Chris at learntocodewith.me/podcast. And if you like my conversation with Chris, make sure to subscribe on whichever podcast player you listen on. If you're feeling particularly generous, I would be super appreciative if you could leave a rating and review as well. I hope you enjoy this final episode in season 3. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, really excited to talk to you today. I think you're the first person I ever had on the show that specializes in security. So we'll definitely get into all that. But really quick, can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Chris Weisopol. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Veracode. Started the company 11 years ago. We're now recently acquired by CA Technologies, so we're part of CA Technologies. And so I started the company in order to help people produce more secure software. We always see that you need to patch your software because there's a vulnerability in it. At the end of the day, that's something that could have been taken care of while the software was being built. It could have been built with more secure thinking in mind. And so what I do is I help people build secure software. So it's sort of right the first time and you don't need to patch it later.
All right. Awesome. And definitely, I think in the news the last several years, of course, security is always being mentioned in different kinds of hacker organizations and even just people maybe not necessarily hacking government institutions, but I'm thinking of like the celebrities who have their iPhones hacked. So it really affects so many different facets of people's lives. But I kind of want to backtrack, if you don't mind. How did you first get into the field of security?
Yeah, so I went to college and got a bachelor's degree in computer and systems engineering. So I got out of school and I became a programmer. And I started to this was around the time that the internet was first becoming a public thing that you could connect to the internet, and I started researching like what is the internet and what are these what is a web browser and how does that communicate and all that. And as a software developer, I started to think, well, wait a minute, this seems like there's going to be security challenges here because you're letting people over the network, over the internet that you don't know, connect to your computer. And that really fascinated me that was going to be, a new challenge. And I just started, trying to learn, from books, right? Because there wasn't a lot online, and talking to people. And I ran into some people that really were interested in also exploring security and what this meant for the new internet. So I was kind of there at the very beginning of the internet starting to think about these problems. I guess I'm still, challenged by it today.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine how much the field has changed since the early days and what we were thinking about working with security in, you know, the 90s versus today in 2017. So that's like such a deep topic. You could probably talk for like hours about that.
Yeah.
But if you don't mind doing like a little quick overview, how have things changed for you working in security over the years?
Yeah, so it's a huge moving target, right? Because what happens is the vulnerabilities are in the software and the devices and the systems that, you know, people use. Like that's where the data is, and that's where the attackers want to get at it. And technology changes so quickly. So like every few years, there's something new to learn. So I started off focusing on Unix way back, even, you know, Linux, Solaris. And then as Windows became something that businesses used, I started to have to focus on Windows and you know, how do you secure a Windows machine? How do you write a secure Windows piece of software? And then, about 10 years ago, we got mobile devices. And then it was about iOS and Android. And now with moving to the cloud, it's like, how do you secure your software where it's running in the cloud, where now it's more, instead of a web interface, it's an API that maybe a mobile app talks to. So the exciting thing is the technology always changes, and with the technology you get, you know, new security problems you have to solve. You say like, well, how do I authenticate to that? How do I use encryption there? Is there a new programming languages used that you need to understand how to securely code with those programming languages? So it's always been changing. And in general, it seems like it's kind of getting better, like we learn from the past to not make the same old mistakes. But a lot of times when things move to a new platform, we start to make the same old mistakes again. So even though we got like maybe good at securing Unix, then Windows came along and we needed to get good at that. So for me, it's a very exciting dynamic, intellectual challenge to always be trying to secure what, you know, enterprises are using and what developers are building with.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And when you're mentioning about how the technology is always changing, I'm thinking about things like driving cars and wearables and smart homes.
Absolutely. No, I didn't even mention that. But along with that's even the latest thing, right? So it's even brand new is, you know, people buying devices that they're connecting to their Wi-Fi network, and it just sort of talks to the cloud, right? It's like it's storing your videos up there, or it's you're communicating to it. So it's another vector that attackers can connect to over the network. And like you're right, with cars and also now with medical devices, it isn't just like, you know, playing pictures anymore or playing audio. It's actually controlling, you know, big machines or, you know, potentially life-threatening equipment. So it's a challenge to think about, well, what are we going to have to do to make sure that all those things are secure?
Yeah. As you were speaking, I was just thinking about something like an Alexa, like being hacked and how terrifying that could be. Because I feel like, yeah, like Alexa is always sort of turned on, always sort of picking up and overhearing background noise at home. So, oh, dear.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I don't have one.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I would love to get into that. Maybe a bit later. Hey, maybe even now. What are some like basic security things that we should be aware of? I want to say as the layman, but even as someone who's just like a web developer building websites, maybe they're a freelancer and they're making websites for clients, or they work at like a design agency or digital agency. They're making, of course, websites there for clients as well. What are some basic things to think about?
Yeah. So if you're building, like say you're building a web app or something like that, one of the things to think about is oftentimes we don't write all the code for our application. We use a lot of open source components. So you're like downloading pieces of code. If it's JavaScript, you're pulling down these JavaScript libraries or just referencing over the internet. That's all part of your program. So it's important to understand sort of what you're doing with these building blocks of your software, and are those secure? The other thing is to just get You know, there's some basic things that you have to get right to have a secure program. So, you know, you need to have, you know, authentication, right? You need to have a secure way of your users, you know, identifying themselves and showing that with a password or you know, some other way. You know, all those things you have, and you have to get that right. You know, password resets and all that. So a lot of times you need to, you want to find pieces of code that, you know, implemented that correctly and not have to, you know, sort of write all that from scratch. Same thing with encryption. You never want to write that from scratch. So you want to find a good, you know, good frameworks and components for the platform you're writing, whether it's, you know, JavaScript or it's Ruby, things like that. So you have to start to think up front, like, what are the frameworks and components I'm going to use to write my program, and what do I know about whether those are secure or not? And that's usually typically a good starting point. The other part is you're going to write your code. You're going to get your application working. Another important part is security testing, right? So how are you testing that there aren't, you know, easy to find vulnerabilities that if you put this out on the internet, an attacker is just going to, you know, point one of their attack tools at it and, you know, scan for vulnerabilities and exploit them. So you want to think about before you publicly, you know, put the code out there so that anyone on the internet can connect to it. You want to make sure you've done proper security testing. And there's a few different, you know, ways to do that. That security testing.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And of course, it makes so much sense as far as testing security goes. So at a company, like maybe mid-sized to large company, who is responsible for doing the security testing? And what kind of job description may that person have?
Yeah, so we're actually seeing that change from what it was in the past. So, you know, sort of what it is in the past and sort of the way it's always been done is there's been a security team at the company. And that security team, you know, is in charge of, you know, the firewall and putting any kind of endpoint security on laptops and things like that. But there's typically someone on that security team that if that company is writing code, which, you know, most companies are these days, if you're writing code, that security team will usually be involved in testing it. And the way it used to be done was, you know, the developers would spend their time writing the application, and before they made the application live, whether it was something that they shipped to their customers or they uploaded to the cloud to run, or they had, you know, they were running it on their own infrastructure and opening it up to the internet, no matter how it was deployed, before it's available to customers, the security team would then do what was called, you know, a manual penetration test, where they would, you know, they would try to attack it sort of manually with a set of tools that attackers use and sort of simulate what attackers would do. And so we're starting to see that change to more automated tools, something called static analysis, which scans the code for vulnerabilities, and dynamic analysis, which interacts and crawls through the whole website and tries to attack like every form field, every input in the website. And so Those more rigorous tools have come along, and what we're seeing is security team, you know, someone from the security team would run those tools on a piece of software. But more recently, in the last few years, we're starting to see the developers start to take charge and start to see the developers actually running those static and dynamic scanning tools themselves, and not always involve the security team. Maybe if they had a question or there's a finding from the testing tool that they don't understand, then they would go to the security team. But what we're starting to see is the developers are taking charge of it. And the reason they're doing this is because we're seeing the trend is to write software and deploy it much more quickly than in the past. Things like the Agile movement, where you have a small team that's able to write new updates to the code in maybe a few weeks. And there's just no time for a handoff to another team to then go and do the security testing. The developers have to do that security testing while they're writing the code. But we're seeing even more accelerated development with the movement to DevOps and a fully automated pipeline, continuous deployment pipeline for writing code. So a developer can, you know, check in some code, it automatically gets built, it automatically gets tested, and then if all the tests pass, it automatically gets deployed in production. So if you think about how you know, automated and fast that process is, there's really no time for another team to have a manual process around running some testing tools. Those testing tools have to be used by the developer and built right into their tool chain. So that's really how we're seeing security change right now.
Sit tight, podcast listeners. We're taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Does your current job bum you out? Are you learning to code on your own and find yourself getting stuck? With Launch Academy's Boston and Philadelphia-based coding boot camps, you'll learn all the skills you need to launch your career in programming and software engineering in just 10 weeks. With a cutting-edge JavaScript curriculum that evolves every cohort to teach students the most current in-demand skills, it's the quickest route to becoming a software developer. Thanks to their 8-week prep program and a lifetime of postgraduate support, Launch Academy makes sure you get the job you want by continuing to teach you job prep skills after you graduate. That's why over 90% of Launch Academy graduate job seekers secure jobs as software engineers. Get started by attending an open house, a free Learn to Code event, or scheduling a one-on-one video interview. Make sure to ask about special offers for Learn to Code with Me listeners during your admissions interview. Find out more at launchacademy.com.
Programming languages come and go, frameworks come and go. The one constant is your openness and ability to take on new information and use that to tackle the problem at hand.
I learned how to learn again. I learned how to be really comfortable with something that's brand new and say, I don't know what I'm doing, but let's read about it. Let's tinker with it. Let's figure it out.
There's a bunch of stuff that I want to do and learn. And I Flatiron School taught me that I can get there.
Being a lifelong learner, the most important first step to being a successful programmer for your whole career.
Flatiron School essentially prepared me to handle everything.
Get $500 off your first month by visiting flatironbootcampprep.com. Okay, awesome. Seriously, I just learned so much. I mentioned before the call that this is an area I am not very strong in. I don't personally know a lot about. Wow, and you did such a great job explaining. Thank you. I totally understood everything you said. And there's so many things you mentioned that I want to like pull apart. Most recently, you mentioned DevOps, which
yep.
I know is a super in-demand field. I also know, I think it's very similar, site reliability engineer, right? SRE, those are kind yep. of similar, I believe. Mm-hmm. So could you explain a bit about what this role is and why it is sure. so demand? And for the listeners who may not be aware, it's actually, from my understanding, one of the highest paid tech positions because of, I think, its level of difficulty and how hard it is to find good people to fill these roles.
Yeah. So as part of that, sort of DevOps team, you often have, you're often deploying into the cloud and applications are getting just more complex. It used to be an application was, one program that ran on one machine. And that was like really simple, say it was a web server or something. And then if you needed more capacity, you just replicated that one machine. Maybe you had five of them and you had a load balancer in front. And it was just a very simple architecture. And you didn't run into a lot of strange problems with that simple architecture. But what we're seeing now is the way modern, internet applications are built is they're being built with things called microservices, and they're using the web services that the cloud provider allows them to use. So a microservice, for example, is just a small program running on a machine, but instead of having one big monolithic program, you have maybe a dozen or more small programs all talking to each other to make the functionality of the program. And then in turn, those small programs, instead of like using their local disk storage or using a local database, they're going out to the cloud provider services to use, you know, an example would be like Amazon's S3 buckets to store files. So they're calling out to that. What ends up happening is you end up building a much more complex system because you have all these moving pieces and they have to authenticate to each other. They have to maybe scale up and scale down based on the load. You know, just imagine what's happening at Netflix when everyone finishes dinner on the East Coast and wants to watch a show. All of a sudden, they're getting 10 times the traffic that they were getting earlier. So, you know, things have to scale up. And so what the site reliability engineer does is make sure that all of that works. And say if one of the machines goes down, the architecture is such a way that the whole system stays up. You know, no one wants to see the error screen when they connect to a site on the internet. But behind the scenes, oftentimes you'll have disk failures, you'll have network failures, you'll have machines go down. You'll have someone will update one of those microservices and there'll be a huge bug in it and it'll be a problem. The site reliability engineer's job is to architect and plan and monitor, very important to monitor how the system is running to make sure that you're getting 100% uptime. So a big part of that is having the appropriate logging and monitoring of what's happening all across the system and being able to, you know, set the right alerts that when actions need to be taken to maintain the reliability of the system. So it's really a job that's come of age because we're building these huger, complex cloud applications. I can see why it's, you know, in high demand and it's highly compensated.
Yeah, I could also imagine how stressful it could be being mm-hmm. DevOps or site reliability engineer at a company like Netflix, say, and there's a big premiere of a show and like the site is down or it's part of it is down.
Yes.
and everyone is tweeting angrily. And yeah, so I feel like for that alone, it should be highly compensated because that'd be
so
stressful.
So what they do, what the reliability engineer does is they'll stress the system beforehand. They'll stress the system. They'll see how it responds and tweak it so that hopefully there's no surprises, you know, when the new show comes out.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. So as you're talking about all this, I'm thinking, how can a person learn these skills? Are there classes one could take? Do they even teach this in college? Like I feel like a typical or traditional computer science program may not cover this stuff.
That is true. The typical computer science program does not cover this stuff, does not typically cover anything that has to do with securing, you know, the application you're building, doesn't cover, you know, a DevOps development methodology, doesn't cover site reliability engineering. And this is one of those things that I kind of have a bone to pick with the way computer science is taught because it's very theoretical. You know, it's all about algorithms and high-level math, and it's not so much about actual day-to-day building of systems. So these are the kind of things that you have to search out more like online courses or books to learn these kind of things. I know for DevOps is a great book called The DevOps Handbook. Gene Kim is the lead author. And we had all of our engineers read this at Veracode. And it really talks about, you know, how do you do DevOps? What are the benefits of DevOps? And it gets into site reliability engineering a bit too. It actually gets into security too, because I think a lot of people feel like site reliability engineering and security are part of DevOps. So if you're going to do DevOps, you have to do those other things well.
Okay, got it. That was called the DevOps Handbook by Gene Kim. We'll definitely include that in the notes. And you definitely, I was going to ask after where a person could learn then, because I was assuming that the typical computer science program didn't teach that. However, are there any alternative programs? I know you mentioned information systems. I think you said that's what you studied. Is there anything out there? Maybe it's not computer science, but it is at a university where people could go to learn.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure that I know of any real university courses, but there's well, the you know, there's a lot of writing by, you know, on SRE specifically up on Google's site. Google kind of invented this concept, I think, and they've done a lot of writing about it. So there's a lot you can learn by just Googling for site reliability engineer on google.com and reading some of the material that they've written. For things like, if you want to learn about security, we actually have a lot of articles on the Veracode website to do that. So I think in these fields, you know, it's kind of so bleeding edge, you're really kind of looking to some of the companies that are experts at it sharing some of their learnings online.
Awesome, got it. Thank you. So if a person wants to get into these fields, whether it's DevOps or security, site reliability engineering, let's just say they do have a computer science degree or something related from college, but they never learned these particular things. How do you, like, what is the best way to go about learning? I know you mentioned there are books and courses and whatnot online,
yep.
But are there junior like DevOps roles or junior security roles or site reliability engineering roles that are kind of like a good entryway or maybe tangentially related roles that then they could kind of work their way up like the path to being someone in DevOps?
Yeah, so I think you know, most companies that are writing software, whether it's, you know, a software company or maybe it's a, you know, a bank or something that's a big enterprise and they're writing their own software for, you know, their online banking site or things like that, you know, places that are building software, they're in a transition phase now where they have engineers that are writing applications the old way. And they have engineers that are writing it with DevOps. You know, we're going through this at Veracode. Not every piece of code that we write is using the DevOps methodology, but we do have teams that are using DevOps. So most, what you could do is you can get a job at a software company or an enterprise that is going through this transition, and you can kind of transition along with the company. So you can get, you know, you can say, I'm really interested in getting on to one of those new DevOps teams, and you can learn along with the other employees. I mean, a lot of this stuff is so new that I think it kind of an on-the-job training is appropriate for a lot of it.
All right, awesome. That's good to know. So on-the-job training, and that it's so new that it's kind of refreshing, or I feel like it kind of levels the playing field, the fact that it really isn't taught in universities and it is so new that even if you are more of a beginner or something and you're getting into it, it hasn't been around terribly long. So it's like everyone is sort of new.
No, exactly. Exactly. Not this. If someone says they have like 10 years of DevOps experience, you have to really, you know, look at them funny because, you know, at most people who are doing it have only been doing it for a couple of years at most. So it's exciting to learn it, and I think just, you know, getting a job where the company says, yeah, we're moving down that path, that would be the kind of job that, you know, you could take if you were interested in learning it.
All right, nice. Okay, so we talked about a ton of stuff today, which is totally awesome. There's one question I also have for you, and I'm not even sure if this is an appropriate question to ask, if it's even accurate, I don't know, but I, again, mentioned before the call, I do writing, I interview different people who work in cybersecurity and related, and I hear these different terms like chief security officer, data protection officer, and things of that nature. What is kind of the differences and maybe in the paths for someone who wants to go down the securing web applications, which I think would be more the site reliability and the DevOps, and then versus someone who's more so interested in protecting like the data that the company is collecting from users?
Yeah, so on the security side, we typically call them, you know, application security consultants, or sometimes they're called, you know, a manual penetration tester if they're doing it manually, to get you know, those people are the ones that help the developers secure their software, And oftentimes they, you know, usually they're actually former developers because they have to be able to talk to developers, understand things at the code level. So they're really developers that were then interested in security and learned from there. They started as developers. Someone who's like a data protection officer, you know, they're really focused on encryption of the data. And then, you know, access control, like who has access to the data. And a lot of times they're, you know, sort of thinking about privacy policy and like what data can we let certain people look at. And that role is, you know, a lot of it is around access control and privacy and like that. If you're, someone who's a chief information security officer, that's more of an executive position that really needs to be able to communicate with the other executives in the company and talk about why, you know, security is important to protect the brand of the company, to protect the company from getting fined if it's in a regulated industry. So the CISO is usually how CISO is pronounced. Is talking with the CTO who's building software. They're talking to the general counsel about compliance. Oftentimes they're talking with the suppliers of the company, the people who are in procurement, because you know if you have a supplier that's supplying a service to the company, that means your company's data might be out, you know, in the cloud. It's some SaaS company's environment. So the CISO really is someone who's not really, you know, down in the weeds doing coding. They're more dealing with the business risk problems of the company. So, you know, you could see people take a career path of starting off as, you know, a network security person or an application security person. And as they grow in their career and maybe they grow into management, maybe they want to go into a more CISO role. They want to do that, or they might want to stay, you know, doing, you know, more of the hardcore, you know, coding level work. So it's a pretty big field.
Yes. And the other one I forgot to mention. Oh, and thank you for clarifying how to pronounce CISO. I was saying CSO, mm-hmm. I think because I never actually maybe heard anyone say it out loud, or I never made the connection. But in any event, CIO, right? Chief Information Officer.
Chief Information Officer, that's someone who is really in charge of all the IT systems of the company, but also is often these days has to deal with, you know, procuring services, because there's less infrastructure running at companies now where you're downloading and installing software on, you know, in your data center. More and more you're going over the internet and you're using applications like, you know, like Salesforce, things like that. So the CIO is typically in charge of making sure that the infrastructure is working. So the network is up, the email is working, everyone's got their laptop. And from a security perspective, they often, you know, can overlap a bit, you know, making sure all the systems are patched, Windows Update is running and things are configured securely. So sometimes the CIO ends up doing a little bit of the security work. That's more of the sort of the day-to-day, making sure laptops and servers are secure. But their real responsibility is making sure the infrastructure is there so the business can leverage IT technology to work.
Awesome. I just want to thank you again so much, Chris, for coming on the show. After you're about like the 60th person to come on. And for the first time ever talking about security, DevOps, and related career paths in such detail. So I just want to thank you for that. And finally, I would love if you could let the audience know where people could find you online.
Yeah, sure. So I am pretty prolific on Twitter. So Twitter is probably the best place. My Twitter name is at WELDPOND. So that's a good place to see me. And I'm often talking about, you know, application security topics and DevOps topics and how we need to embed security into the development process. So that's a big focus of what I tweet about.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for coming on.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Again, the show notes for this episode can be found at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper navigation and type in Chris's name. That's spelled like Chris, C-H-R-I-S, and his last name, W-Y-S-O-P-A-L. This is the final episode of season 3 of the show. But don't worry, because season 4 is already in the works. I'll be back with another round of interesting and inspiring guests in the fall. In the meantime, make sure you're subscribed to the show on whichever podcast platform you're listening on. This way, you'll be the first to know when season 4 launches. And there are plenty of other ways to get your fix of coding inspiration and advice while I'm gone. The easiest way is to go to learntocodewith.me and enter your email address in the form at the top of the page. I'll send you my 10 tips for teaching yourself how to code and also let you know when I publish a new blog post or come across another useful resource. I also write regular tech articles for Forbes, which you can find at learntocodewith.me/Forbes. Thank you once again for tuning into season 3 of the podcast. I've learned so much from our guests, and I hope you have too. Have a great summer implementing what you've learned and improving your skills, and I'll be back in the fall. Bye.